Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Cat lovers and feline friends, it's time for Adele Park's Quirky Catnips.
Today on Quirky Catnips, we're airing a chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park. This frightfully funny tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Find out what happens when Skitters goes cattywampus for a kitten named Harriet. Tune in each week to hear a new chapter of Quirky Cat Goes Splat, only on Pet Life Radio. Meow, kitties!
Audio Recording St. George presents Quirky Cat Goes Splat. Written, produced, and edited by Adele Park. Narrated by a full cast.
Splat!
Meow, bitches.
Twisted Tales by Skitters the Cat. Part 15.
Out of all the animals here on Earth, cats are the best at getting under the skin of humans. I mean that literally. That's why they call it cat scratch fever. There are certain humans I take genuine pleasure in annoying. Topping the list, Blue McKenna. Although her name would imply otherwise, Blue has a habit of wearing all white, the perfect canvas on which to deposit excess cat hair. I love to rub up against Blue's legs when I know she's heading out. She gets so ruffled while I'm all like, what? I'm just trying to show a little affection. I got off on the wrong paw with Blue a few years ago. She's been hounding my tail ever since. It all started when Nancy Neptune bailed Blue out of a sorry mess involving a truckload of marijuana. Blue had been growing the stuff in the oasis near Gecko's Gulch and selling it to dopers in Boulder, Colorado. Then she met the rectal surgeon of her dreams and needed a drug runner. At the time, Neptune was driving a tacky, fuming wreck called the Latter-day Litmobile. She was in her polygamous couture phase, meaning all Neptune would wear were hand-me-downs from the female hostages at Zion Flats. Always one to break new ground, Neptune became the first woman in the history of mankind, or in the case of Zion Flats, not-so-kind man, to make this polygamous prison wear look kind of cool. Neptune's tats and piercings had a special way of turning drab into fab. I'm a warm weather kitty. So let me tell you, I was none too happy to be rattling around in the Latter-day Litmobile when the engine conked out on Colorado's Vail Pass in the middle of winter. As luck would have it, some elderly Mormon missionaries from Utah rescued Neptune from having to answer some very pointed questions from law enforcement. Despite such troubles, Neptune successfully delivered the goods to Blue's medical marijuana dispensary in Boulder. I may have shown my displeasure concerning the stressful trip by clawing up the place. Ironically, now that Blue has become Mrs. Rectal Surgeon, she no longer lays claim to the dispensary. Why then is she still mad about the artwork I did in Boulder?
Chapter 15. Blue McKenna.
The shrieks sounded like hell's yells. The noise reverberated through my body like a tongue stuck in a light socket. I had just stepped out of the car at Juniper Hollow when the spine-stiffening, heart-freezing bellows of terror began. I told Brandon to stay put while I went to look for Taj. My initial instinct was to jump back in the car and hightail it to safety. I couldn't do that, not with Taj out there. I was having a hard time getting my head around the idea that screeching was likely coming from him. It was the sort of thing you'd expect to hear from someone who had tangled with a ghost. Rather than thinking it through, I lurched forward, tripping on a disgustingly hairy fiend that was no doubt reaching up from the depths of purgatory to drag me under. I landed with a curious splat, followed by an indignant yowl. Oh, for stale cheese on a saltine cracker. That little fucker Skitters was here, playing his favorite game, running right in front of me, hoping I'll wipe out. Mission accomplished, hair licker. Before I could recover, a smaller creature ran right over the top of my back, I could feel tiny claws digging in through the thin material of my pajama top. Ew! Did I just get coochied by a rat? I shrugged my shoulders violently, shaking the wretched thing off. I could hear the little varmint scampering in the wet soil. By the time I got to my feet, the screaming had stopped. That scared me even more. What came next was worse. I have never heard such tortured sobbing. For a second, I thought, wow, Taj sounds like a girly man when he cries. This was replaced by, holy buckets, what if he's wounded, eking towards a painful death? I should have looked to see if Taj was in bed, sleeping. Usually Brandon is the one I have to covertly check up on. When Brandon woke me up and started churning out this crazy story about Taj, missions, and Forbidden Lake, I thought I was getting pranked. One look on Brandon's face, and I knew otherwise. I bolted out of the house in pajamas and flip-flops. Falling on my face had quelled my earlier urge to make my bladder gladder with a little preemptive pee. I slipped, trying to scramble to my feet. The apparition seemed to be floating towards me. It looked like a little girl, all in white, with long hair. It was sobbing the same word over and over. It sounded like baptism. Oh my God. My butt cheeks were clenched so tight, I thought they might burst out of my pajama bottoms. Was this ghoul going to drag me into the baptismal font? In that moment, I was cured of every insane desire I ever had to experience a paranormal encounter. Before I could yell at Brandon to run for help, I heard him behind me saying something like, "Nice going, Owen." Right about then, Taj stepped into the beam of light from the ATV. It was aimed at the eerie baptism pool, which was overflowing with water. Relief washed over me as I realized the other figure must be Evangeline. No one else in their right mind would be at Juniper Hollow at this time of night. The spooky crying was from Evangeline, sobbing the word baptism again and again. "Evangeline," I said loudly, trying to get her attention. "Calm down. Let me help you." Evangeline was uncharacteristically animated, not to mention chatty, although she sounded like a broken record with the whole baptism thing. By now, Taj had figured out Evangeline wanted to be baptized in the font. She seemed maniacal about it. Worried about being on mob property, or worse, that someone from Zion Flats would show up, I tried to herd everyone towards the car. I took Evangeline's hand, hoping she would trust me. That touched off a series of shrieks that I could only quiet with the promise of letting Evangeline get baptized. Truth be told, I kind of specialize in oddball ceremonies. They give me a cockeyed sort of thrill. I'd never pulled off a baptism before, but how hard could it be? "Quick," I shouted to Brandon and Taj, "let's form a circle and do this thing." I was buzzing with adrenaline. We had to wade through several yards of soggy grass to get to the font. I could see from the small beam of light there were steps leading down to the bottom. I gathered Evangeline in my arms, hoping to Jesus I wouldn't slip. The water came almost as high as my waist. It was colder than a polar bear's rear end. I tried to ignore the history behind this nasty water. My stomach wasn't buying it. Oh God, please don't let me puke. The thought of standing in this murky pool with floating chortle chunks was too much. "Look out!" I shouted to Taj, shoving him out of the way of a surprisingly violent projectile of hot vomit. I somehow managed not to drop Evangeline, though she was turning her little head away in disgust. Brandon started in with some remarks about baiting the water with thunder chunder, which I was definitely not in the mood for. Cradling Evangeline in my arms, I rattled off some crazy nonsense about God and the afterlife, pronouncing her baptized. Brandon piped up to say we needed to dunk Evangeline in the water. Thanks. I thought putting Evangeline all the way under was a little excessive, but I did it just to be thorough, quickly bringing her right back to the surface. Evangeline ceased with her disturbing baptizing chant. She seemed satisfied with my performance, wriggling out of my arms. Before I could stop her, Evangeline bolted into the darkness. Fortunately, she was heading towards the car. Catching up to her, I could see Evangeline clutching a small orange cat. Maybe I wasn't accosted by a desert weasel after all. Evangeline introduced the cat as Harriet. I noticed Skitters slinking around. Was it possible he was jealous that Evangeline was petting another cat? Just in case, I made a big show of giving Harriet a good scratching behind the ears.
Hang tight, kitties. We'll be back in a scratch. In the mood for a killer audiobook? Quirky Killers by Adele Park is the story of a serial bride who sends her husbands to heaven in a hurry. Too bad the cops don't see the humor in this and arrest this woman who is just trying to make sure everyone gets to meet God. Quirky Killers. Get it today on audible.com. You'll die laughing.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We now return to more of Quirky Cat Goes Splat by Adele Park on Pet Life Radio.
With the kooky christening now behind us, it was time to clear out before the zombies from Zion Flats showed up. Or even worse, the mob. Taj, can you shut off the water? And make sure to turn off the generator. At the rate the water was moving through the irrigation system, the whole damn lake would be empty in just a few hours. To my relief, Taj had made plans to drain the tub after he finished his mission. He called the process backwashing, a procedure they use for cleaning swimming pools. I was impressed with Taj's engineering skills, but it wasn't enough to get him off my shit list. I didn't have a phone number for Arinda, the woman in charge of Evangeline. There was no way I'd pull into Zion Flats in the middle of the night to try to explain this situation. I wasn't even sure what had really happened. Everyone was shivering and wet, so I drove to Geckle's Gulch instead, following behind Brandon, who was riding the ATV. Taj was in the back seat with Evangeline. To my dismay, Evangeline insisted on bringing Harriet with her. Skitters, the queefy hairball, darted in with them. Great! Now my car looks like I moonlight as a mobile pet groomer. Evangeline's long braid reeked of the worst kind of lake water. It smelled like dirty diapers mixed with a splash of death. I was surprised such a small child could have so much hair, even though I was possibly breaking the law by bringing her to Gecko's Gulch. I took a moment to marvel about what the shower drains must look like in Zion Flats. Taj made everyone hot chocolate. Evangeline seemed to have a weird trust of Taj, though I've never seen them interact very much. When Evangeline started to nod off, I laid her down on my bed while I pondered my options. Something was going on between Taj and Brandon. They weren't covering for each other like they normally do. Taj had turned into a blubbering mess, shedding tears and apologizing for nearly killing someone in his quest to nab a Guinness World Record. Brandon remained silent, letting Taj do all the talking. What else did you do besides sneak off in the middle of the night, trespass on property owned by the mob, illegally tamper with someone else's irrigation system, and endanger the life of a young girl? Taj assured me that was the whole of it. Brandon helped piece together why Evangeline was in the font to begin with. Evangeline's mother had tried to drown her there. Maybe Evangeline had been told she was getting baptized, which is a really big deal in the polygamous culture. The boys were exhausted. I sent them off to bed, promising to thoroughly interrogate them in the morning. Stretching out beside Evangeline, I debated over whether I should disrupt Moon on her vacation. That would be about as pleasant as trying to wrestle a raw steak from a starving dog. I wondered if I should call Scotty. He'd burst a blood vessel and then try to blame everything on Brandon. I nodded off to sleep, weighing my options. A few hours later, I was awakened by the old battle axe herself, Arinda, angrily pounding on the front gate of Gecko's Gulch. Wonderful. I answered, sporting a Gary Busey hairdo and a skittish attitude. Could they arrest me for kidnapping? My sister had briefly landed in the clink after helping Isla Rae Stratton escape an arranged marriage with a demented cyclops from Zion Flats. Hi, Arinda. Moon is out of town and we won't need any housekeeping services until she gets back. That sounded lame even to me. I noticed Arinda had kept that grotty van she drives still running, a sign she wasn't planning to stay. That's why I was surprised when Arinda pushed right past me, insisting that she be able to call Moon. Crossing the threshold to the interior of the house, Arinda beelined to the phone in the kitchen. I wasn't sure what to do. Evangeline was still sleeping. Should I fess up and admit Evangeline was here, or drop her off at the fence surrounding Zion Flats and act like I didn't know anything about it? My stomach had a mind of its own. Nothing like regurgitating hot chocolate and oatmeal cookies first thing in the morning. When I got back within earshot of the kitchen, I could hear Arinda growling into the receiver like a frenzied ferret. I got the feeling she had called more than one person. I jumped when Arinda addressed me, hovering behind the wall. This wasn't a woman of many words. The ones she uttered tended to have a big impact, especially when I was ordered to get the girl. For Pete's sake, this child has a name. Now didn't seem like a good time to press that point, however. I called Moon as soon as Arinda huffed away with Evangeline and Harriet. Arinda had been forced to take the critter or endure what I guess was a rare tantrum coming from Evangeline. Skitters tried to jump in the van with them. I was sorry to see Arinda unceremoniously dump Skitters in the dust before peeling out of the driveway. I guess I was just hoping for too much. Moon was cryptic in her response to the crisis, advising me not to talk to anyone about what had happened. My guess was that she had another rescue plan in the cooker, though why she would be helping that furry frump Arinda was a mystery. Taj's punishment was to call his parents and tell them what he did. I could hear him sobbing again, which was good. This was serious business. Brandon wasn't in trouble, but I sent him off to clean his room. It smelled like Evangeline's hair did after marinating in that Beetlejuice from Forbidden Lake. Taj, steeped in guilt, prepared my favorite meal for lunch, fried chicken and new potatoes with gravy. It was a lot for a noonday meal, but I hadn't been able to hold anything down for the last few days. I assumed it was the flu, though my appetite seemed to be on the voracious side. Halfway through ice cream floats made with Rowdy's Righteous Root Beer, the chime rang for the outside gate. Unlike the earlier pounding delivered by an irate Arinda, the bell sounded pleasant and non-threatening. I should have looked before I yanked the gate open. I've seen enough news photos to know I was seeing none other than Nephi Stratton, the prophet of Zion Flats. "Can I help you?" I asked, trying not to sound nervous. Nephi wanted to know about Arinda, not Evangeline. That makes sense. Arinda was his chief snitchstress. "Good karma is closed this week," I stammered. Suddenly, I was glad Moon was deliberately evasive with me. I followed up with, "None of the workers are here." I thought that would end it, but Nephi just stood there, rooting a finger around in his nose like he was mining for gold. Eureka! He found one! I thought, if he eats that booger, I'm slamming this gate. I don't care if he shoots his way into the compound. My tummy was so delicate these days, I knew it couldn't withstand witnessing the actions of this gack-eating pedophile. I sensed Brandon standing behind me. "Get back in the house, Brandon. This nice gentleman is just leaving." Fat chance. Nephi stayed where he was. I'll bet he wishes now he hadn't. The stress of the situation, combined with the carbonation from the root beer, put my tum-tum on the offensive. I aimed the salad shooter that had become my stomach straight at Nephi. Instinctively, he jumped back, but not fast enough to avoid having me spray lunch puree all over his work boots. Oops, sorry. I locked the gate to the compound and instructed the boys to stay inside for the remainder of the afternoon. I was sick, dizzy, and confused. What in the holy hell was going on here? Before I had a chance to sort it out, the chime on the gate rang yet again. This time, I had the good sense to ask who was there before automatically welcoming in whatever big bad wolf had come to blow the house down. The caller identified himself as Deputy Kip Nichols. Well, that's just perfect. Now I get to talk to this schnook. Spooked by the unwelcome visit from Nephi Stratton, Brandon had called the cops. Just my luck, they sent my ex-boyfriend, the one who was married during our carnal clutchings. Briefly, I wondered if I could summon another barf blast. It had certainly been effective in getting our last visitor to leave. Kip overstayed his welcome. I guess he figured the 10-mile drive to Gecko's Gulch entitled him to a folksy gaggle because he hung around long after being assured no one was in danger. Kip was acting way too familiar. I worried his smarmy behavior would tip off Brandon. I hadn't even told Scotty about Kip. When and if I did, I'd be sure to mention that while Kip may act like a giant dick, he doesn't own one. All these secrets were making me want to launch my lunch again. I finally got Kip to leave by telling him I had an extremely contagious form of the flu. I even faked a wet sneeze in his direction. The next morning was a delirious nightmare, primarily because I had to drop Taj off at the bakery at an hour when no one should be awake. I'd finally decided to see a doctor. My appointment wasn't until mid-morning, so I joined Brandon for a nap in the car. It didn't work, even with the AC blowing full blast. When the library opened, I found a couch to stretch out on while Brandon did some research. I wasn't sure if he was just putting on a show since he and Taj were in the doghouse, or if he really was writing his term paper. He certainly seemed to know a lot about the history of Juniper Hollow. I was just getting in my car to go to the doctor's office when a lanky, freckled farkle of a man approached and asked if I was Brandon's stepmom. Scotty has become increasingly worried about his ability to stop Drew Compton from jabbering to the world that he is Brandon's real father. The future of celebrity cougars was hanging by a thread. Maybe this was Drew's last chance at fame. Son of a biscuit! Was Drew so desperate for attention that he actually had the balls to show up in Naval? The man was handsome, in a Wild West sort of way. Not at all the way I pictured Drew. He was polite, too, which really made me suspicious. I wasn't going to take this crap. My family was at stake here. Back off, you degenerate slime sucker, I yelled, taking a swing at the man's head with my purse. It caught him square on the jaw. Too bad it wasn't full of rocks.
What happens when cats and ghosts collide? Find out in Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted by Adele Park. This quirky tale is narrated by the ever-so-snarky Skitters the Cat. Skitters finds himself in the most unfortunate position of having to help his nemesis, Blue McKenna, go to heaven, hell, or somewhere other than where he is. Otherwise, Blue will continue to bug Skitters as much in death as she did in life. Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted is a frightfully fun prance through the desert. Quirky Cat Gets Ghosted. Get ghosted today on Audible, Downpour, and Spotify. Meow, kitties!
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.